Please be aware the stories, theories, reenactments, and language of this podcast are of an adult nature and can be disturbing, frightening, and in some cases offensive. Listener discretion is therefore advised. Hey, there is very adult content ahead and you have been warned. Welcome, heathens. Welcome to the world of the weird and unexplained. I'm your host, Nicole Delacroix, and together we will be exploring stories about the weird, wonderful, unexplained, eerie, scary, and downright unbelievable. There will be tales of ghosts, murder, supernatural beings, and unexplained mysteries. So sit back, grab your favorite drink, relax, and prepare to be transported to today's dark enigma. And on today's Dark Enigma, in honor of my Louisiana heritage, we're going to talk a little bit about Mardi Gras, and then we're going to be talking about one of the most haunted locations in good old New Orleans. So, before we can get started, though, we have a little business to take care of. That's right, the drinking game. There are tons of Mardi Gras-themed drinks, from a hurricane to a zombie. So, I've provided a link to some of the more well-known. But, much like New Orleans, anything goes. As always, the drinking game is only for those listeners who are not driving or who will not be driving. So, mon cher, I love you all too much for you not to drink responsibly. And, for the game, how about every time I say New Orleans, it'll be a single shot. And if I happen to speak French, well, then it will be a double shot. So, let's get things started off on the right foot. C'est le bon temps roulé, my heathens, and take that double shot. All right. Well, Mardi Gras is a Christian holiday and a very popular cultural phenomenon that dates back thousands of years. That's right, I said thousands of years, and I mean it. It goes all the way back to the pagan spring and fertility rites. Also known as Carnival or Carnaval, it's celebrated in many countries around the world. Found mainly in countries with large Roman Catholic populations, on the day before the religious season of Lent begins, there is the Fat Tuesday celebration. While New Orleans is the most well-known of the Mardi Gras celebrations, you can find festivities in many cities, including Brazil and Venice, all of which have famous public festivities drawing in thousands of tourists and revelers every single year. But what is Mardi Gras anyway? Just a reason to get drunk and get naked? Well, we don't really need a reason for that, now do we, sweethearts? No, Mardi Gras is a tradition that dates back thousands of years to the pagan celebrations of spring and fertility, including the raucous Roman festivals of Saturnalia and Lupercalia. When Christianity arrived in Rome, religious leaders decided to incorporate these popular local traditions into the new faith, an easier task than, well, just abolishing them altogether. And you know what? People liked them. As a result, the excess and debauchery of the Mardi Gras season became a prelude to Lent, the 40 days of fasting and penance between Ash Wednesday and Easter Sunday. Along with Christianity, Mardi Gras spread from Rome to other European countries, including France, Germany, Spain, and England. And, well, what does Mardi Gras mean? Well, Mardi is the French word for Tuesday, and gras means fat. So, in France, the day before Ash Wednesday came to be known as Mardi Gras or Fat Tuesday. Traditionally, in the days leading up to Lent, merrymakers would binge on all the rich, fatty foods, meat, eggs, milk, lard, cheese, that remained in their homes in anticipation of several weeks of eating only fish and some other different types of fasting. Yeah, I don't get it, but whatever. Now, the word Carnival, another common name for the pre-Lenten festivities, also derives from this feasting tradition. In medieval Latin, Carnivalrium, yeah, I screwed that up, buy me a drink, means to take away or remove meat, from the Latin carnum for meat. The first American Mardi Gras took place on March the 3rd of 1699. That's right, I said 1699, guys, when French explorers Pierre Le Moyneux d'Iberville and Sieur de Bienville landed near present-day New Orleans, Louisiana. They held a small celebration and dubbed their landing spot Pointe du Mardi Gras. In the decades that followed, New Orleans and other French settlements began marking the holiday with street parties, masked balls, and lavish dinners. When the Spanish took control of New Orleans, however, they abolished these rowdy rituals, and the bans remained in force until Louisiana became a U.S. state in 1812. Oh, the Spanish. We hate the Spanish. You took away our drink. Stop it. On Mardi Gras in 1827, a group of students donned colorful costumes and danced through the streets of New Orleans, emulating the revelry they'd observed while visiting Paris. 10 years later, the first recorded New Orleans Mardi Gras parade took place, a tradition that continues to this day. In 1857, a secret society of New Orleans businessmen called the Mystic Crew, that's crew with a K, of Comus, organized a torch-lit Mardi Gras procession with marching bands and rolling floats, setting the tone for future public celebrations in the city. Since then, crews have remained a fixture of the carnival scene throughout Louisiana. Other lasting customs include throwing beads and other trinkets, wearing masks, decorating floats, and eating king cake. And hey, did you know Rex, one of the oldest Mardi Gras crews, has been participating in parades since 1872? And he established the purple, golden, green as the iconic Mardi Gras colors. Louisiana is the only state in which Mardi Gras is a legal holiday. However, elaborate carnival festivities draw crowds in other parts of the United States during the Mardi Gras season as well, including Alabama and Mississippi. Each region has its own events and traditions, so look up your locals and find out what they're doing. Across the globe, pre-Lenten festivals continue to take place in many countries with significant Roman Catholic populations. Brazil's week-long carnival festivities feature a vibrant amalgam of European, African, and Native traditions. In Canada, Quebec City hosts the giant Quebec Winter Carnival. In Italy, tourists flock to Venice's Carnevale, which dates to the 13th century and is famous for its masquerade balls. Known as Carnival with a K, Fastnacht, or Fasching, the German celebration includes parades, costume balls, and a tradition that empowers women to cut off men's ties. Yeah, that's just weird. I'm just going to say, I'm German, and it's just weird, guys. Sorry. For Denmark's Festival, children dress up and gather candy in a similar manner to Halloween, although the parallel ends when they ritually flog their parents on Easter Sunday morning. That's just, make sure you give me enough candy or I'm going to beat the crap out of you, Mom. I don't know about the rest of you, but I think I'm going to stick to eating far too much and drinking even more because, yeah, that sounds like a lot more fun anyways. So, what exactly is Mardi Gras? Well, Mardi Gras is traditionally celebrated on Fat Tuesday. That's the Tuesday before Ash Wednesday and the start of Lent. In many areas, however, Mardi Gras has evolved into a week-long festival. Mardi Gras for 2019 occurs on Tuesday, March the 5th, though many places, such as New Orleans, begin their celebrations the weekend before. Mardi Gras 2020 will fall on Tuesday, February the 25th. How do you like that one? And on that note, we're going to take a little break here and let you, well, throw me some beads, goddammit. And when we return, we will be talking about the most haunted place in New Orleans. So, rejoignez-nous après la pause, or join us after the break. Bienvenue à nouveau, païens, or welcome back, heathens. So glad you came back for this exciting tale of haunting in the world's most mysterious city and one of its best known stories. That's right, my little darling heathens, we're going to be talking about the La Loirie Mansion in the beautiful French Quarter of New Orleans. The haunted history of the La Loirie Mansion in New Orleans is perhaps one of the best known stories of haunted houses in all of New Orleans. It tragically recounts the brutal excess of slavery in a horrifying and gruesome manner because for more than 150 years and through several generations, the La Loirie house has been considered the most haunted location in the French Quarter. Let's just say that this story, well, is not for the faint of heart or for the weak of stomach either, because it gets kind of grisly. So you've been warned. The origin of this ghostly tale dates to 1832, when Dr. Louis Lalaurie and his wife Delphine moved into their Creole mansion in the French Quarter. They became renowned for their social affairs and were respected for their wealth and prominence. Madame Lalaurie became known as the most influential French Creole woman in her city, handling the family's business affairs and carrying herself with great style. Her daughters were among the finest dressed girls in New Orleans. For those lucky enough to attend social functions at 1140 Royal Street, well, they were amazed by what they found there. The three-story mansion, although rather plain on the exterior, was graced with delicate ironwork, but the interior was lavish by anybody's standards. The house had been made for grand events and occasions. Mahogany doors that were hand-carved with flowers and human faces opened into a bright parlor, illuminated by the glow of hundreds of candles in gigantic chandeliers. Guests dined from European china and danced and rested on oriental fabrics which had been imported at great expense. Madame Lalaurie was considered one of the most intelligent and beautiful women in the city. Those who received her attentions at the wonderful gatherings could not stop talking about her. Guests in her home were pampered as their hostess bustled about the house, seeing to their every need. But this was the side of Madame Lalaurie the friends and admirers were allowed to see. There was, unfortunately, another side. Beneath the delicate and refined exterior was a cruel, cold-blooded, and quite possibly insane woman that some only suspected, but others knew as a cold fact. The finery of the Lalaurie house was attended to by dozens of slaves, and Madame Lalaurie was brutally cruel to them. She kept her cook chained to the fireplace in the kitchen, where the sumptuous dinners were prepared, and many of the others were treated so much worse. We have to remember that, in those days, the slaves were not even regarded as being human. They were simply property, and many slave owners thought of them as being lower than animals. Of course, this does not excuse the treatment of the slaves or the institution of slavery itself, but merely serves as a reminder of just how insane Madame Lalaurie may have been. Because her mistreatment of the slaves, well, it went far beyond just plain cruelty. It was the neighbors on Royal Street who first began to suspect something was not quite right in the Lalaurie house. There were whispered conversations about how the Lalaurie slaves seemed to come and go quite often. Parlor maids would be replaced with absolutely no explanation, or the stable boy was just suddenly gone, never to be seen again. Then, one day, a neighbor was climbing her own stairs when she heard a scream and saw Madame Lalaurie chasing a young girl, the Madame's personal servant, with a whip. She pursued the girl into the roof of the house, where the child jumped to her death. The neighbor later saw the small slave girl buried in a shallow grave beneath the cypress trees in the yard. A law that prohibited the cruel treatment of slaves was in effect in New Orleans, and the authorities who investigated the neighbor's claim impounded the Lalaurie slaves and sold them at auction. Unfortunately for them, Madame Lalaurie coaxed some relatives into buying them and then selling them back to her in secret. The stories continued about the mistreatment of the Lalaurie slaves, and uneasy whispering spread among her former friends. A few party invitations were declined, dinner invitations were ignored, and the family was soon politely avoided by other members of the Creole society. Finally, in April of 1834, all of the doubts about Madame Lalaurie were realized. A terrible fire broke out in the Lalaurie kitchen. Legend has it that it was set by the cook, who could endure no more of the Madame's tortures. Regardless of how it started, the fire swept through the house. After the blaze was put out, the firefighters discovered a horrible sight behind a secret barred door in the attic. They found more than a dozen slaves there, chained to the wall in a horrible state. They were both male and female. Some were strapped to makeshift operating tables. Some were confined in cages made for dogs. Human body parts were scattered all around, and heads and human organs were placed haphazardly in buckets. Grisly souvenirs were stacked on shelves, and next to them a collection of whips and paddles. It was more horrible than anything created in man's imagination. According to the newspaper of the time, the New Orleans Bee, all of the victims were naked, and the ones not on tables were chained to the wall. Some of the women had their stomachs sliced open and their insides wrapped about their waists. One woman had her mouth stuffed with animal excrement, and then her lips were sewn shut. The men, well, they were in even more horrible states. Fingernails had been ripped off, eyes poked out, and private parts had been sliced away. One man hung in shackles with a stick protruding from a hole that had been drilled in the top of his head. It had been used to stir his brains. Take a moment and take that in. Yeah. The tortures had been administered so as to not bring about a quick death. Mouths had been pinned shut, and hands had been sewn to various parts of the body. Regardless, many of them had been dead for quite some time. Others were unconscious, and some cried in pain, begging to be killed and put out of their misery. The firefighters fled the scene in disgust, and doctors were summoned from a nearby hospital. It is uncertain just how many slaves were found in Madame Lalaurie's torture chamber, but most of them were dead. There were a few that still clung to life, like a woman whose arms and legs had been removed, and another who had been forced into a tiny cage with all of her limbs broken, then set again at odd angles. Needless to say, the horrifying reports from the Lalaurie house were the most hideous things to ever occur in this city, and word soon spread about the atrocities. It was believed that Madame Lalaurie alone was responsible for the horror, and that her husband had turned a blind but knowing eye to her activities. Passionate words swept through New Orleans, and a mob gathered outside the house, calling for vengeance and carrying hanging ropes. Suddenly, a carriage roared out of the gates and into the milling crowd, and it soon disappeared out of sight. Madame Lalaurie and her family were never seen again. Rumors circulated as to what became of them. Some said that they ran away to France. Others claimed that they lived in the forest along the north shore of Lake Pontchartrain. Still other rumors claimed the family vanished into one of the small towns near New Orleans, where friends and relatives sheltered them from harm. Could this be true? And if so, could the terrible actions of Madame Lalaurie have infected another house in addition to the mansion in the French Quarter? Whatever became of the Lalaurie family, there's no record that any legal action was ever taken against her, and no mention that she was ever seen in New Orleans or her fine home again. Of course, the same thing, well, cannot be said for her victims. The stories of ghosts and a haunting at 1140 Royal Street began almost as soon as the Lalaurie carriage fled the house in the darkness. After the mutilated slaves were removed from the house, it was sacked and vandalized by the mob. After a brief occupancy, the house remained vacant for many years after, falling into a state of ruin and decay. Many people claimed to hear screams of agony coming from the empty house at night, and saw the apparitions of slaves walking about on the balconies and in the yards. Some stories even claimed that vagrants who had gone into the house seeking shelter were never heard from again. The house had been placed on the market in 1837 and was purchased by a man who only kept it for 3 months. He was plagued by strange noises, cries, and groans in the night, and soon abandoned the place. He tried leasing the rooms for a short time, but the tenants only stayed for a few days at most. Finally, he gave up the house, and the house was abandoned. Following the Civil War, Reconstruction turned the empty Lalaurie Mansion into an integrated high school for girls of the lower district. But in 1874, the White League forced the black children to leave the school.
A short time later, though, a segregationist school board changed things completely and made the school for black children only. This lasted for 1 year. In 1882, the mansion once again became a center for New Orleans society when an English teacher turned it into a conservatory of music and a fashionable dancing school. All went well for some time as the teacher was well known and attracted students from the finest of the local families. But then things came to a terrible conclusion. A local newspaper apparently printed an accusation against the teacher, claiming some improprieties with female students, just before a grand social event was to take place at the school. Students and guests shunned the place, and the school closed the following day. A few years later, more strange events plagued the house, and it became the center for rumors regarding the death of Jules Vignier, the eccentric member of a wealthy New Orleans family. Vignier lived secretly in the house from the later 1880s until his death in 1892. He was found dead on a tattered cot in the mansion, apparently living in filth, while hidden away in the surrounding rooms was a collection of antiques and treasure. A bag containing several $100s was found near his body, and another search found several $1,000s hidden in his mattress. For some time after, rumors of a lost treasure circulated about the mansion, but few dared to go in search of it. The house was abandoned again until the late 1890s. In this time of great immigration to America, many Italians came to live in New Orleans. Landlords quickly bought up old and abandoned buildings to convert into cheap housing for this new wave of renters. The LaLaurie Mansion became just such a house. And for many of the tenants, even the low rent was not enough to keep them there. During the time when the mansion was an apartment house, several strange events were recorded. Among them was an encounter between an occupant and a naked black man in chains who attacked him. The black man abruptly vanished. Others claimed to have animals butchered in the house. Children were attacked by a phantom with a whip. Strange figures appeared wrapped in shrouds. A young mother was terrified to find a woman in elegant evening clothes bending over her sleeping infant. And of course, the ever-present sounds of screams, groans, and cries that would reverberate through the house at night. It was never easy to keep tenants in the house, and finally, after word spread of the strange going on there, the mansion was deserted once again. The house would later become a bar and then a furniture store. The saloon, taking advantage of the building's ghastly history, was called the Haunted Saloon. The owner knew many of the building's ghost stories and kept a record of the strange things experienced by patrons. The furniture store, well, it did not fare quite as well as the bar did. The owner first suspected vandals when all his merchandise was found ruined on several occasions, covered in some sort of dark, stinking liquid. He finally waited one night with a shotgun, hoping the vandals would return. When dawn came, the furniture was all ruined again, even though no one, well, human anyway, had entered the building. The owner immediately closed the place down. Today, the house has been renovated and restored and serves as luxury apartments for those who can afford them. A few years ago, the owners of the house were remodeling when they found a hasty graveyard hidden in the back of the house beneath the wooden floor. The skeletal remains had been dumped unceremoniously into the ground, and when officials investigated, they found the remains were not of recent origin. They believed that it was Madame LaLaurie's own private graveyard. She had removed sections of the floor in the house and had hastily buried them to avoid being seen and detected. The discovery of the remains answered one question, but unfortunately created another. The mystery of why some of the LaLaurie slaves seemed to just simply disappear was solved at last, but it does make you wonder just how many victims Madame LaLaurie may have claimed. The LaLaurie mansion is an unmistakable piece of New Orleans with its Baroque facade, wrought iron balconies, and rectangular floor plan. Located on Royal Street in the French Quarter, the mansion is at once striking in its grandeur and right at home among the many similar tenements. When Marie Delphine McCarthy Blanc Lalaurie purchased the property in New Orleans and built a three-story mansion there in 1832 in her own name and with little involvement from her third husband, the house quickly gained that reputation as one of the grandest homes in the city's French Quarter. It was admired for its Baroque facade, wrought iron balconies and rectangular floor plan, and its massive bulk towered over most of the other houses in the neighborhood. The Lalaurie Mansion still stands on the corner of Royal and Governor Nichols Streets, a highlight of many New Orleans ghost tours. In the late 2000s, the house was owned for a short time by actor Nicolas Cage. Completely restored, it remains today a place of both beauty and dark intrigue. But for almost 200 years, there have been reports of paranormal activity coming from this house. It shouldn't surprise many that a lot of the hauntings can be traced back to the slaves that Madame Lalaurie kept on the property. Reports of moaning coming from the room where the slaves were kept are common. Phantom footsteps echo through the house with regularity, and many people who have stood near the house have reported feeling as if they were taken over by a negative energy. Despite all the ghost stories and paranormal happenings at the Lalaurie house, it would be folly to assume that all of them can be traced back to Madame Lalaurie and her mistreatment of slaves. In 1894, a tenant of the Lalaurie mansion was found brutally murdered in his room. His belongings had been ransacked as if somebody had gone through them. The police assumed that he was a victim of a robbery, even though nothing of value could be found as missing. An interesting account about this murder deals with the police interviewing neighbors about his disappearance. One of his friends claimed that he was having problems with sprites in his house. His friend wrote it off as his imagination running wild with him, but he did say something interesting, that his friend had claimed there was a demon in that house who wasn't going to rest until he had met his end, which is exactly what happened to this poor man. Is it possible that at least some of the ghostly phenomena can be a result of this brutal murder? However, nobody will know for sure until the location can be investigated by a real paranormal investigation team. Only then, by communicating with the dead who still reside, can we hope to get to the bottom of the truth about the ghosts at the Lalaurie Mansion. Now, the Lalaurie Mansion was, for a very brief time, also a school for all girls during the mid to late 19th century. At first, it had been one of the few mixed schools in the city of New Orleans, but politics during the Reconstruction era were convoluted, and surely enough, soon after, the school at 1140 Royal Street was converted into strictly an all-girls African-American primary school. Within a short amount of time, reports of physical assaults came to light. The young girls were known to approach their teachers, tears streaking down their face and their sleeves rolled up. The exposed flesh of their forearms were scratched and bruised. The teachers would demand, "Who did this to you?" And the answer was always one and the same, "That woman." But these girls were young enough that they were probably not aware of Madame Delphine and the devastating tragedy some decades earlier. Moreover, it was unlikely the teacher themselves would tell 6-, 7-, or 8-year-olds about the starvation and immoral torture of slaves some decades before. But one must wonder if in this situation the young girls were playing pranks on each other, or if their claims that some phantom woman had scarred them was true. Is the curse at the Lalaurie Mansion real? On many of the plentiful ghost tours and walking tours, you will hear the entire sad, tragic story of the slaves of Madame Lalaurie and the ghosts and hauntings that happen with regularity at the Lalaurie Mansion. While you're not able to go inside the mansion at this time, several of the walking tours have this on their destinations, and you surely will not forget your visit to the Lalaurie Mansion. And with that, we've come to the end of our episode, and we thank you for joining us again today. We hope that you'll take some time to reach out to us and share your thoughts on Mardi Gras or the Lalaurie Mansion. You can reach the show at darkenigmapodcast@gmail.com. And hey, if you have suggestions for future shows or just want to tell me what you think, drop me a line. And in the immortal words of Drew Brees, quarterback for the wonderful New Orleans Saints, if you love New Orleans, she'll love you back. And I agree wholeheartedly. And on that note, that's all the time we have for today. And I thank you for joining us here on Renegade Talk Radio. And don't forget to tune in next time.
We don't sugarcoat shit. This is Renegade Talk Radio. Renegade Talk Radio.